Have you ever wondered how a song is made? How it starts? What happens during the recording process? How does an idea become that beautiful 3-minute thing you hear on the radio? My name is Emmeline, and in Journey of a Song, I take you on a tour of a musician's creative process from the first notes to the final recorded song. As a singer-songwriter and an independent recording artist, I'm intimately familiar with the magic of music creation, but I also know that each song has its own sacred story. In each episode, I talk to a different songwriter as they pull back the curtain on a favorite composition, beginning with an acoustic version of the song and ending with the final recorded product. In between, you'll hear a conversation about the inspiration behind the song, the decisions made in the recording booth, and the many ways in which music reflects and informs our emotions and our lives. For our very first episode of 2024, we're bringing back the phenomenal singer-songwriter Catherine Patterson. A multi-instrumentalist and a thoughtful, delicate vocalist, Catherine celebrated 2023 by releasing 2 singles as a solo artist. She's back today to celebrate the release of her first full-length solo project, Wake, by giving us an exclusive look at one of the tracks. Here's Catherine Patterson with a closer look at Miss Clavel. Welcome back to Journey of a Song. I'm your host, Emmeline, and I am so excited for our slew of episodes in 2024. I can't believe it's already 2024, but welcome to the show. And I'm especially excited because our guest today is kicking off the year by releasing a brand new full-length project. And she's a repeat offender here on the show. Please welcome back Catherine Patterson.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good. How are you?
It's wonderful. I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm glad to talk music.
Me too. I'm really excited to be back.
I'm glad you're back. I'm excited to get nerdy about these songs. You have a beautiful body of work that you're releasing very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give people the details of all of that. Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you feeling all the things?
I think to bring it back to our last episode, I'm excited and scared, which is, you know, Into the Woods, Little Red Riding Hood. Yeah, I think it's, you know, I've been working on this project officially for 2 years, but, you know, like some of these songs kind of came out of the woodwork. So it's been a very long process. I'm very excited to share it. And also, I think there's a little bit of fear going into releasing something and sharing something so vulnerable and personal to the world. But I think the overwhelming feeling for me is excitement.
Yay. Well, I'm so excited to share in that excitement with you and to introduce our audience to one of the songs on the body of work. We're going to give everyone an exclusive sneak peek today at Miss Clavel.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to let our audience hear the acoustic performance of that right now.
Miss Clavel doesn't live there anymore. In that house, you know, the one with the wrought iron door. They tore down the ivy, repainted the walls. No more to hear a little girl's padded footsteps down the hall. That's all there is. There isn't any more. The Spanish ambassador's son is on his own again, with no one to teach him the good, reform the bad hat within. In place of the home that dear Madeline bewitched, a multi-million-dollar house for the idle rich. That's all there is. There isn't any more. We're running fast on streets with cracks in them. We're running faster to fill them in with plaster. Except But turn a blind eye to the fate of our paths. We're running fast, faster and 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 faster towards disaster. Something's not right. Something's quite wrong when we destroy the greenery to appease the throngs. And all that is left is a plaster cast bone that just isn't strong enough to call a home. That's all there is. There isn't any more. Miss Clavel doesn't live there anymore.
Yay!
Yay, thank you.
That was beautiful. I think one of my favorite things about this series is hearing bits and pieces of these songs when, like, people do open mics, and then getting to hear the fully produced versions at the end and, like, hear all the differences, but especially to hear how the songs grow over time.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how the performance is always slightly a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think especially with this one, you know, I wrote it, peak pandemic, when I was unemployed on the floor of my bedroom, and spent a lot of hours just on the carpet. And yeah, I think it was very cool to see how this song particularly took shape, because, you know, I had an image of it in my head and in my ear that was so acoustic and so just like acoustic guitar voice. And it doesn't deviate so much in the fully produced version, but there are some elements that are added to it that I think just really fill it out and tell a story. So yeah, it's very, very cool. And I'm excited to, you know, play it live as well, because that's going to be a completely different version from the acoustic version, from the recorded version. So I think that's what's so cool about music is every performance is different, and that's kind of the fun of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, to move from a song that you wrote during the pandemic, because I feel like during COVID, all of us were very aware of our own isolation.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everything happened in a vacuum.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that sensation, especially if you're musicians who feed off crowds, that sensation of the give and take with an audience was so far away from us.
Yeah.
That it was difficult to imagine what an audience would give to any of the songs we were writing, because I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, not that I like think of myself as a deep pessimist, but more of a realist. You know, we left for spring break, we didn't come back.
Yep.
I think there was this sensation of, do we get to do this again?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you that's all there is. There isn't any more. I was like, is this the reality of it? Like, are we forever gonna be on live streams? When do we go back? How do we go back? Do we ever take masks off? And it feels very foreign to say those things now. You know, 4 years almost.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was very lucky. Of course, it's very different than performing live, but when I was writing a number of the songs that are on the album, I had friends, my partner Lily Lane, who's a songwriter herself, who's like the most patient, generous listener, and has listened to a lot of these songs in like less than half finished stages, and you know, gives me notes, and my family. So like I had people that I was testing these out on, even if I didn't have an audience to sort of share in the experience with, because I think part of the reason why I write music, though I think it's a totally valid pursuit to just write like, this is for me and this is not for anyone else, for me these songs were not just for me, And so being able to share them with somebody, even if it was just, Lily coming home at the end of the day, or sending a voice memo to my sister saying, "What do you think?" Was like critical. I mean, yeah, it was a really important part of these songs coming together, and also just like my soul feeling good, you know?
Yeah, I think artist connection is such a key element of what we do. Whether that's, like you said, the intention at the outset, or whether it is just a thing that is an outgrowth of our own vulnerable sharing, I think connecting with people through art is so pivotal to just human existence, but especially to our existence as artists, like knowing that we're not alone in an experience is
Yeah, I think
validating.
there's a song on the album called The Clearing that definitely is more directly sort of performing this, like, I'm not the only one, like I'm not the only one here. Like, there are other people here now, there were other people before me. You're not alone in this type situation. Like, I'm not the only person ever to have felt this way. And yet, there is a uniqueness in everyone's individual experience, and there's a really wonderful thing in communing around these shared experiences.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of shared experiences, we talked a little bit about this. I mean, Madeline is kind of a shared literary experience for all of us who went through childhood at a specific period of time, especially. You make all these literary allusions, but for people who aren't familiar with the books, I think there's still a lot of meat in this. Was that allusion intentional at the outset? Was that something that just kind of came? How did this song form?
That's a great question, and I feel like I wish I took better notes. General, so I don't know, I don't remember exactly where. Oh, I remember. Emmeline, you're an inspiration.
That might be giving me too much credit.
No. So again, peak pandemic, I was going on a lot of walks, because that was a lot of the outside time of the house that I was getting. And we were living with my partner's family at the time, and there's a house on their street that used to be covered with vines. If you know the Madeline books, or if you don't, there's every book pretty much starts out, there was an in an old house in Paris, all covered with vines, lived 12 little girls in two straight lines. And before my time, before living in with my partner's family, they had torn down the ivy, and like I think painted it, but basically trying to make it look a bit chicer, maybe, which to me felt like a loss. And in terms of character, and it kind of made it a bit more sterile. And so I remember walking, and it had just rained, and there were worms that I was saw drowning in puddles, and so it was a very kind of like sad headspace that I was in. And I'm always listening to Joni Mitchell, so I think this was kind of my attempt at a more mellow Big Yellow Taxi. So just thinking about these things of like, what do we do in pursuit of progress, and what do we lose, or what does it mean to grow up? What do we lose in losing a sense of childish wonder? Or so there's a lot in this song, that, as you're saying, I hope that people who even who aren't familiar with the characters of the Madeline stories, can still identify with.
Yeah, for sure. I think you touch on some really important things in here. I love you calling it like a mellow Big Yellow Taxi. Just because I think you grapple with something kind of different, right? Like that was to me more about a destroying of the wild thing to create a city thing, or to create a thing with concrete, or to create a thing that was obviously functional. But you go even deeper here and you talk about, or at least the way I perceived it, was a conversation about social pressures to be the same. Social pressures to look the same, to be the same. And I don't know, I think you hit on a pandemic feeling for me with the run, we're running faster and faster and faster, just because I remember saying to a friend a couple weeks after everything had shut down, when it became clear that we weren't going back quickly. Like, I think had we not shut down, I might not have survived that semester
Yeah.
because it was so jam-packed full of things. And I feel like we've gone back to that society that is so jam-packed full of things to
Yeah.
chase, who knows what.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, I think sometimes we come to these points of, I don't know, reckoning might feel strong, but maybe it's the right word, where we look back or we look forward and we're like, how did we end up here? Yeah, I mean that I don't even know that I have more to say. Like, how did we end up here? Where am I actually going? Is this where
Yeah.
I wanted to be? What happened to that person I was, or what happened to that dream? What's happening to the planet? These kinds of questions that are very serious, and also there have to be other moments. You can't just sit in that. There's a lot
Yeah.
of difficulty and death and all of that in the world. And this song is an offering in the darker side of things. And also there are other songs on the album that are entertaining, lighter notes, happier moments, nostalgia, in a way that I hope comes across as more joyful, more celebratory, because it's not all bad, not all sad, but you also have to hold space for those feelings as well.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to ask the questions without it being sad, right?
Yeah,
Because you don't,
totally.
you get to the last verse before the last chorus, if you will, where you say something's not right, something's quite wrong when we destroy the greenery to appease the throngs. But I think before that, the song is just a depiction of something that happened.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be sad or happy. It just kind of is. And I think to call attention to that, and then to use the line, that's all there is, there isn't any more. I think I didn't perceive this as you drawing a conclusion one way or the other, but just kind of,
Yeah.
posing an unspoken question about is this what we want to be doing?
I love that. Yeah. I think it's very challenging as a songwriter to not answer a question in a song, to not offer like, okay, and this is the answer. That's all there is, there isn't any more is in Madeline, but also it's something that Ethel Barrymore said, I think at Curtain Call. So this kind of thing where it's like, no, that's it. Like that's not necessarily a bad thing. But this is what we've got, And so like, what are we doing with it? What are we going to do? Yeah. I'm now like going in a totally different place in my brain. So bear with me. But I'm very excited to tell you about a line that I cut from the song.
Tell me about a line that you cut.
I was showing this to Lily and my sister, and in the second verse, it's the a multi-million-dollar house for the idle rich, right? But it used to be a Cinderella palace with a staircase smeared with pitch. And I played it for both of them, and they were like, "I don't know that everyone knows what pitch is, and I don't know that that's gonna really do the thing, And I was like, "Well, I'm just trying, like maybe people will get it, and I'm trying to like evoke this image of, like it's a trap, or like, it's something that like once you commit to it, like are you gonna be able to?" It's kind of, like in Into the Woods, she's stuck on the steps of the palace, and she's like, "Is this what I want?"
And the
Like,
stew and the goo.
yes, in the goo, exactly. So, I thought you would appreciate that.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, but she says something so poignant that I think we might have touched on last time that so resonates with this song for me, at least. And a song, and as an English professor, something that I pull up when I have students write in journals, which is, and you know what your decision is, which is not to decide.
Yes. Ah, yeah.
And I think that that is what struck me about this song, is that we all have the ability to just sit and watch things happen, but we also have the ability, granted the limited ability, but we have the ability to exact some influence. And sometimes that influence is successful in changing a course of action, sometimes it's not. But if we never try,
Yeah. And
then
I think so, you know, oh, go ahead. Go
no, just it calls to mind, where there are literary allusions all over the place. We're gonna
ahead.
just go straight to super nerd town. We're not even gonna
Great.
pass go.
Take me there.
Exactly. We're just gonna go straight there. There's a brilliant author named Elaine Castillo. Shout out to her. The book jacket of her first short story collection. She wrote that her stories were about the people we become when we're not looking. And that phrase has stuck with me for 20 years. I mean, that was when she released this book. But I think that's such a powerful image that, you know, when there's not a degree of intention, when we do just kind of let things happen, when we become passersby, when we sit on the opposite side of the street and watch a house get destroyed and don't say anything about it or create a record, we just let it happen and walk away. You know, we do become something.
Yeah, it feels like, I mean, I think, you know, the bridge here in the song and also what you're getting at, this sort of like, it feels like you're on a treadmill and you could get off, or you could just keep going, at maybe an increasing speed. But you do have the option to get off and look and see what's happening. And also, like, you know, there's something about momentum, right? Like, there's something about inertia. So, you know, what is that force that's acting on the moving object that makes it stop, you know? Anyway, yeah,
Yeah,
that's
and you
really, what is the short story collection called?
Vinci Guerra.
Okay, I'll have to find that.
It is pretty fantastic. Yeah, it's called Vinci Guerra. Her second collection is called Eden in the Afternoon.
Okay.
And it's just the last short story in the first book is called Death and the Lovers. And it is what happens to Romeo and Juliet after they die.
Ooh,
And it
nice.
is hilarious and poignant and dark and very funny. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's that same kind of, I love that you say we could get off, because I think the thing that we always forget that we can do is slow down. Like, you don't have to get off. You don't have to run the race with the person next to you. Like, I don't know how many of our listeners are as competitive as I am with myself.
And I am.
Right. Like, that's the thing, right? Is you get on the treadmill and you're next to somebody else who's on the treadmill and you're like, they're going pretty fast. I wonder if I could go that fast. I can probably go that fast, but I'm not going to let them beat me. And you know, and then you just jack it up. And then all of a sudden you're sprinting and they're sprinting and everybody's sweating and nobody can breathe. And what are we doing?
Yeah, the last song on the album is called Please Stop the World. And I wrote it for Lily, and it's a song that I like to conclude all of my so far sound sets with. It's a nice it's basically what I feel like music does for me, which is just kind of hit pause. And I wrote it for Lily, just kind of trying in those moments where it feels like everything's spinning out, you know, being like, okay, like you can take a moment, and if you can't make that moment for yourself, like I will hit pause for you. And so it's a very special moment because Lily sings it with me. And yeah, it's kind of this thing where we're arriving at the conclusion of like we don't have the answers, and like maybe this is kind of a circle, but we can learn how to hit pause, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so easy for us to forget that we are in control of our own speed. It's just so easy to get persuaded by the people around us, whether it's an intentional persuasion or not, and to let ourselves get dragged into the current. And yeah, I think there's a lot of power and beauty in that, periodically just asking yourself, do I want to be here? Is this what I want to be doing? And it's okay if the answer is yes.
Oh yeah,
But
totally.
wow, there's so much power in that yes. So you talk about how, so the collection of work is called Wake, and you're releasing it this Sunday. So close.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, the 14th is like very, very almost here, and it's kind of, again, excited and scared. I've got a lot of merch in the works that's come in, and you know, as a small artist, you're doing it all yourself, and so I've got probably 10 to-do lists, and I'm celebrating all the small wins. But yeah, it's really coming fast.
And you hand make a lot of your merch. I have to call out to that.
Yeah,
Because I'm not sure if that's something our listeners know. But
I hand embroider shirts and hats, and I'm getting some stuff printed. I'm not that's a skill I don't need to acquire at the moment.
So they can come. There's a big release show. Can you give us some
Yes.
details?
Absolutely. The show is at Deep Ellum Art Co. On the 14th. I believe doors are at 7 and the show's at 8. I'm really excited to have Kati opening for me. They're a student at Booker T. And they're a phenomenal performer. I actually met them at where Emmeline's background is at Opening Bell. And so I'm really excited to have them perform. I'm going to have some musicians. I've got Sinclair Wade, Jeffrey Michael Widman, Sam Cormier, and Lily Lane all playing with me and singing with me. So I'm really excited to kind of, this is going to be a big community event. And I'm partnering with the Dallas Social Queer Organization, DISCO, to, I don't know, it was just as a queer person in the music scene, trying to make space for all kinds of experiences and cultivate safe space for music lovers of all kinds. And I'm really excited to be partnering with them. They'll have a table there and they'll be talking about what they do. So it's going to be, I think, a really wonderful experience. I hope.
Yeah, I'm sure. So Deep Ellum Art Co. Doors at 7, music at 8. And people get to hear Kati, people get to hear Sam Cormier, Jeff M Michael Widman, you, the fabulous Lily Lane. I'm excited. And I think you do such a good job of storytelling in your songs, of evoking
Thank you.
images, of creating, each individual tale within a song and then kind of weaving them together. Can you tell us a little bit about how Miss Clavel sits in with the rest of the project?
What I was realizing recently was a lot of my songs, though they sound like they're about one thing or one relationship, they're about multiple relationships or multiple things. I don't know if that's me kind of cheating because I'm like, oh, there's not enough here. But I think what it more is about is like, oh, this is a feeling that I'm writing to that I've experienced at this point and this point and this point. And so Miss Clavel, the album itself is about loss more broadly. And a lot of the songs are speaking to loved ones I've lost or foster dogs that I've given up to an adopted family or yeah, you'll love that one. even though you if I didn't tell you, you wouldn't know it was about a dog. Breakups and then I think Miss Clavel is a little bit bigger in scope where it's talking about progress. Probably there's some capitalism in there and growing up and changing who you are or rather just like changing as a person. But this album, the title was inspired by, I don't know if you've read the Sandman series by Neil Gaiman, but it was actually very, Lily was very sweet. She got me the series for Christmas. And I like cried a little bit when I opened the present. So I'm really excited to dig back in. My friend Dave Kopperman, who actually did the incredible album art, which y'all will see soon, and also is a collaborator in another band, Doggerland. He's the one that turned me on to the comics, graphic novels, both. And the last volume of The Sandman is called The Wake. And without spoiling anything, it's there's a vigil, a funeral, and also, of course, it's the Sandman, wake in the context of waking up from a dream. And so that was really realizing that that word can operate in those ways was really special and hit me in a place where I was writing a lot of these songs still when I first read it, and it really resonated with me. So, there's something to the dream world and how we can find people we've lost, partners we've lost, pieces of ourselves we've lost in the world around us, even if they're no longer a part of our lives. And I think a big part of this album is kind of learning maybe how to recognize those moments when they come, because it's easy to miss them.
Yeah, I love all of that. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for making the space for me to talk about this project.
Yeah, and I love that you talk about Neil Gaiman. I think, people think of comic books as probably in the same way people think of the word wake, right? As something that is simple, kind of unidimensional, and something that we already understand, so I dig more deeply. But I think the Sandman series is almost like poetry in comic form.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely like adult, like it's not like comics in that, again, the way that a lot of people think about them. This is for children, like this is definitely adult content and dealing with a lot of adult themes. But yeah, it's a very complex narrative and is again to go back to the source, to Neil Gaiman's words. There's a moment where one of the characters asks, so what are we mourning? And another character, Abel of Cain and Abel, he says a point of view, and this is after someone has died. And I thought that was really, I still don't even know that I fully understand what it means. And at the same time, I think in the ways that, when someone dies, that version of them is no longer here. But the version that has affected us, that part of them that's in us is still there. Or, when you grow out of a phase of yourself, that phase is still there. It's just behind you, or maybe it's in front of you. All of these things where it's like all of this is kind of a circle. And the album is a circle as well. So I hope, I don't know, we're kind of in, I don't know how you feel as a songwriter, writing stuff, but I did write a full album, and I know we're kind of in the singles world or the short attention span world, but I'm really excited to share the full project, to have people listen to it from start to finish, because there's a lot of intentionality there. And yeah.
Ah, there's so much to unpack. Yes, I mean, I think that that's I don't know, you talk about a songwriter, like being a songwriter in a singles world, right? And a songwriter who wants to paint a fuller picture in a world of singles. And I think that's kind of like Miss Clavel as a song, and that you can become what everyone else is becoming, or you can stay true to yourself and believe that that matters. And I think what I have learned in this crazy world of marketing, and because in my other life, I've worked for big corporations, and I think what I've learned over and over and over is that there's no substitute for authenticity. It doesn't matter how smart you are, it doesn't matter how well you play the game, it doesn't matter how fast you run on the treadmill. If you're not doing something that is fully in alignment with who you are and what you want to put into the world, the world knows that. And ultimately, like, that might initially be rewarded, it might be temporarily rewarded, but it's not rewarded for a long time. Because people gravitate towards something real. And if what felt real was putting out an album, put out the album.
Yeah, and that, to be clear, that's not to say that like people shouldn't do singles, people shouldn't write EPs. I
No.
released this album in parts last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, what felt right was putting these songs together
Yeah.
in this way, and it was very interesting to revisit some of these songs after, years. I think one of the songs on there is one of the first songs I wrote, and then some of the songs on there are some of the most recent ones. So I remember sitting on a train. I think I was coming back from New Haven to the DC area, and I was just like, what are the songs I've written? And I wrote down all the titles, and I was like, oh, I'm seeing connections here. And so that's sort of how, not the order necessarily, but how the songs that are on the album became one piece.
Yeah, I love that. I think, yeah, the other thing is you talk about the death of a perspective, right? And how that is something worth mourning. I feel like as songwriters, that's one of the things we combat. because people ask me all the time as a songwriter about the intensity of the emotion in a song, or oh, do you still feel this way, or is it weird to perform a song about a breakup when you're no longer broken up? Like, what does that feel like? And I think that as songwriters, it's almost like we're trying to celebrate a perspective because we know how fleeting they are.
Yeah. I
So
love
was
that.
so I tell people that a song is like a snapshot of a feeling in a moment. And so we do, we like in a very kind of precious snowflake way, right? We preserve that feeling because we believe in its importance.
Yeah. And I think there's like something to being able to revisit it too, where it's like, I felt that way, and now I feel this way. And that's still something I can like honor, whether it's a good feeling or a bad feeling. And I think there's something really comforting in knowing that everything changes and nothing is permanent. I think sometimes that can be a scary thing as well, but I think knowing that the kind of the state of the world is just like change, that is sort of the ever-present course of things. Being able to capture those moments, capture these snapshots is comforting.
Yeah, I mean, to quote another Sondheim song, it's the another 100 people just got off of the train, right? It's like that continuity of life, and yet the chance to pause and be the one with who's taking it all in. And like to be a part of that hustle and bustle, and then to be able to look around and just realize what you're in the middle of. Yeah, I think that's something that I love as a songwriter and something that I really appreciate celebrating. And I think that there is a beauty in, you've grown with these songs.
Yes,
And
very
you've
much so.
performed them in different ways, because I've heard some of these at open
Yes.
mics in different ways, and it's exciting to see. I think as a performer, it's exciting to grow with the song and to hear how your connection to it changes
Oh,
and
yeah.
how the way the audience connects to it changes your perception of the song.
Yeah.
But it's also exciting to, as you know, as a listener, to hear a songwriter get distance from their own catalog, because you hear it differently each time.
Let's set that perspective again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I think it hits us differently each time. I mean, my favorite songs are songs to which I can go back and I understand a different part of it differently every time.
I mean, coming back to Both Sides now, seeing Joni Mitchell perform, or coming back to Joni Mitchell, my brain got ahead of my mouth. Coming back to Joni Mitchell, Both Sides now, seeing her perform that as I think she wrote it as like a teenager, and now seeing her, maybe she was in her early 20s, but seeing her now perform that, in her 70s, 80s, however old she is, like with a completely different life perspective, where that song is about looking back. And yeah, I think it's really special to be able to come back to things and learn something different from them, or hear something different in them, connect differently. And I think that's when you know you've got a good thing.
Yeah, and when people can continue to connect to a song after the moment is gone. Like it's simultaneously extraordinarily difficult and devastatingly easy to write evergreen content. Because you just have to get to the truth of what it means to be human.
And that'll always be true.
Yeah. Like the things, I mean, and that's, I laugh, when you say that you feel like you're right about the same feeling over and over. I had the same conversation with Kati recently,
Oh, really?
who was on Dallas Net Music Network. We were talking about, as a songwriter, what it feels like to feel like you're writing the same song over and over. And that was what Kati said is they said, I feel like I write the same song over and over and over, just in slightly different ways. And maybe that makes me a boring songwriter. And I was like, I think the universe forces us to learn our lessons. And as songwriters, we have this beautiful moment of like, I have caught fire. I have discovered something no one has discovered. And we dig a little deeper and we're like, oh, it's the same feeling. Oh, it's the same lesson. Oh, it's the same thing, But we're looking at it from, like you said, greater points of distance. We're looking at it from different ages. We're looking at it, maybe with a better sense of humor. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. I mean, I think I've been thinking about a new album as I'm kind of closing this chapter of this album. And I feel like the next one, I'm like, oh, a lot of these songs are the same thing, but also they sound very different. And I don't know that that's a bad thing that I'm trying to run at, kind of like peek at from around a door, the same thing, because I think that, as you're saying, like it's all a different perspective. It's all maybe there's something to it. Like there's a reason you're coming back, I guess, is what I'm saying, right? There's like
Yeah.
there's something there that like you as a person, as a songwriter, as a person in relation to other people, as a person in relation to your feelings, like you haven't there's something more to be mined there, not even for content, but just like for yourself, right? And it's kind of a pretty amazing thing to be like, this was my process of working through this thing, or this was my like this was how my brain was looking at this thing over time. And I think that's really cool to have those things to look at again later and say like, wow, I feel differently now, but I remember that, you know, or like this helps me remember those things.
Yeah, or even to go back through something similar and to kind of follow your own emotional breadcrumbs and be like, oh, there's a path forward. Like, there's a path out of this.
Totally. Totally, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I like to say that I write songs as companions for all of life's different moments, the good ones, the bad ones. Because I find that that is a lot of times what music is for me, is it's like a buddy holding my hand in all of those moments, celebrating when I'm celebrating, reminding me that things aren't always this way, maybe things are bad. Comforting me, being with me in the devastation, all of that. You know, I think you need to feel all of those things. And so yeah, I like to write to that.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, you touched on something really important, which is the degree to which music has the capacity to hold the complexity of all of that. To bring it back to Miss Clavel, one of the things I appreciate the most, because our friends are going to get to hear the fully produced version at the end of this, which I'm super excited about because it features one of my favorite instruments, the piano. You talk about how you envisioned this as a very simple, like vocal acoustic guitar piece, and yet there are so many places for extra instrumentation in the production of it. You have moments where, you know, I love that the piano runs as the voice runs and as the lyrics run. You have this kind of scalar thing that happens in the piano that does such a lovely job of musically illustrating what it is that you're trying to convey. How intentional was the adding of that? What was the layering like?
Well, so we were recording, and my producer, Chris Peters, who is a phenomenal producer and also a dear friend, I believe it was his idea to have piano on there, and he recommended Daniel Rudin, who's a New York musician and in the Broadway world as well, I believe, in musical stuff. He's got an interesting project. I can't remember what it's called. I'll send it to you though, because they're doing like reimaginations of classical musical theater stuff in like yacht rock and stuff. So it's like a pretty fun project. Anyway, Chris asked him to do three different versions. And part of it was touching on the, you know, like growing up element of it. So we've got these like very simple piano moments in the beginning that become this, you know, bigger moment toward the end. And so it's showing the pa sort of the passage of time. So that was kind of how that took shape. And then the violin was done by Sarah Kim. I grew up playing violin, so I think that that's always an instrument that I'm keen to have. And I played some of the violin on this, but on this project, not on the song. But we called in Sarah to do the violin on this, and yeah, there was just, I think, those two instruments being part of my childhood wasn't necessarily intentional that they landed on here, but feels very right because my sister played piano, my dad plays piano. So yeah, it was this just really beautiful coming together of talented musicians and storytelling, and I very much approach music from a, I approach it, the production side of things, less from a technical side and more from like a dramaturgical side, the storytelling something. Because I don't know that I could tell you, okay, I want this drum beat here, but I'm like, okay, but this feels like the ocean. Tell me what that would be. And I'm very lucky to be working with musicians who are like, who are not like, what the heck are you talking about? But are like, okay, got it. This is the ocean. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. Or no, that's not it. Try some, you know. So I just worked with such amazing people on this project, and I'm so grateful that they said yes, you know, and were willing to kind of go on this journey with me.
I feel like that's all musicians. I feel like people who are our friends who are listening who are not songwriters. I think if you sat in the studio, you would be devastatingly disappointed at the lack of musical terminology that happens in studio. It's usually like, no, something swirly. You know what I mean? Swirly. Like people are like, yeah, okay, maybe. You're like, I want it to feel like I'm coming out of a dream. Like, you know, we use these very vague feeling based kind of like emotionally illustrative terms that are not at all, you know. I need the minor two
Yeah, right, exactly.
to go to the
Exactly.
five, to go to the four, to the minor four. You know, people don't. I think it's so much more instinctive than that.
Yeah, I would agree. And
That's
I was, you
beautiful.
know, and my producer's also a singer-songwriter, so I think working with someone who kind of is in that brain space of like, okay, I get the emotional element of this, or I get the lyric storytelling of this. How can we support that and enhance it with the instrumentation? In the production was just like, I mean, I think I was kind of scared going into this being my first album, this being the first music I ever released, my second only time being kind of in a studio space and not knowing how to necessarily communicate to other musicians who maybe are used to more technical language. And I just, yeah, I'm so lucky. And I'm very grateful.
Yeah, it's very special to be in a room full of people who want to serve the song.
Yes, big time.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
So Wake is out
Yes.
January 14th.
Correct.
People
Yeah.
who are listening today need to go pre-save it on Spotify and do
Yes, you
all.
can pre-save it. That yes, thank you. I'm so bad at the business stuff. I'm like, yeah, just like listen and connect and, you know, give me a
I
hug.
think if we were super good at the business stuff and not good at the art, that would be horrible.
Yes,
And I
yes.
think if we were only in it for the strategy and the numbers, I hate, I don't know. I'm gonna jump on a hot soapbox and be like, I hate Spotify Wrapped. I really do. I hate it so much because it reduces what we do to numbers, and it's not about numbers. Because the
I would
truth
agree.
is, if you've made a meaningful connection with one person, that's the only number you need.
Yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of gigs where, like, I was playing to a room of people who probably didn't care, and one person came up to me, one single person, and was like, that song really spoke to me. That was so special. I'm like, that feels like I just got $1 million. Like,
Yes. Yeah, you don't need 10,000 streams if you have like one
no.
or two people who come up to you over the course of a year and are like, that song spoke to my heart. Here's a bit of my story. Like that moment of connection worth more than 1,000 streams or a cute graphic.
I agree.
But you
I
should
agree.
still pre-save Wake if you're listening. But yes, if you're coming to the show though, let that be a message that you should come up to Catherine at the end and let her know what has resonated with you.
Yes, please do. I'll be at the merch table. I think this is the first time I'm announcing this. I'm going to give you some exclusive content.
Ooh.
I'm getting some vinyl printed for the album. I won't have it in hand at the show, but I will be pre-selling it. So I'm really excited about that.
Vinyl is expensive to print.
It sure is. I did, though, find a company I'm really excited about in the Netherlands. They use bio-vinyl. All my merch is like, I'm trying to be sustainable. So the shirts and the hats are thrifted. And so this is bio-vinyl. They use like shipping partners that try to ship on already existing shipments. So trying to do it as green as possible. It's definitely expensive, but I'm hoping that, you know, people connect with the music that they want to have a physical version. I think CDs are kind of out, sadly.
I
I think most
know.
people don't have a CD player in their car. And I think also I wanted to give the artwork a big surface to be showcased on because it is just that stunning. Dave just did such a beautiful job. I think I got a little emotional seeing it the first time because it
Oh.
just like really spoke to so many elements of the album and hit me in the place where I was writing a lot of these songs. So, yeah, I'm just really excited to share the music. Pre-save or don't, buy my merch or don't, but like do come up to me and tell me, how it made you feel, because that's really where the quote unquote money is at. That's where like the love is, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like this is a record that is especially suited to a vinyl because it's the kind of record that people need to hear start to finish.
Yeah.
So,
Yes.
like, since it was created with the intention of being a full story, take the time, listen to the full story.
Yeah, I would love that.
So, are you playing it start to finish at the release show?
I sure am.
Oh, yes! So people can come and they can hear the whole thing start to finish. Get in the story, be in the narrative with you, and then come up and celebrate at the end.
Yes. Yeah,
Oh,
that's the hope.
friend, I'm so excited for you. And I'm so
I'm so
grateful
excited.
for your music and for your light in the world. And I'm just so grateful that you take the thought and the time and the care that you do with the music, and that you take the thought and the care and the time that you do with people.
I mean, I'm in very good company here. I mean, you do the exact same thing, and you're so. I'm even struggling to find the word. Just like, it's too simple to say you're so easy to talk to, right? Because that's just like, I think, not even doing service to how much care you take in talking to people, connecting with people. You are such an amazing performer. Like, I have some of the most fun watching you. Oh no, did my computer die?
No, you're good.
Okay, my screen went blank. I think my battery's
Oh
low. This is the life of a musician with an old computer.
no. Right. So please
Well,
come
that
buy
might
vinyl.
be the sign. Yes. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, no, but thank you. That means the world. Right back at you. I think, the beauty of what we do is not only the fact that we get to connect with all these amazing people who are kind enough to listen to this show, but that we get to connect with each other and inspire each other to make more art. So, Wake, out on January 14th. People should get it everywhere. They should especially buy lots of vinyl so that you can buy a new
Yes.
computer.
Yes. Pre-selling vinyl, buy 10 million of them.
10 million. And then listen for my favorite thing to do when I was a kid, and still, if we're being honest, is to like get a new record and turn all the lights off and lay on the floor and just listen to it. Like, I'm that much of an immersion person when it comes to music. I just like to be surrounded by the record. Yeah, so
Highly recommend.
people should go into the bedroom. They should listen start to finish, and then they should take it with them everywhere. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to see it all go down on Sunday night, and I'm so excited that our listeners get an exclusive because we're going to play them the fully produced version of Miss Clavel right now. Would you like to introduce your song?
I would love to. This is Miss Clavel. I'm Catherine Patterson, and I hope you have a beautiful day.
Multi-million dollar that's all there is. There isn't any more. We're running fast on streets with cracks in them. We're running faster. Running fast, faster and 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 faster towards disaster. Something's not. Something's quite wrong when we destroy the greenery to appease the thrones, and all that is left is a plaster cast bone that just isn't strong enough to call a home. That's all.
Thanks so much for joining me for this week's episode of Journey of a Song, featuring the talented Catherine Patterson and her song Miss Clavel. To learn more about Catherine or to follow her musical journey, visit her official website at katherinepattersonmusic.com. That's KatherinePattersonMusic.com.
For behind-the-scenes glimpses and inside information, follow me on Instagram at Emmeline Music. That's at EMMELINE Music. Don't forget to check out my other show, Journey of an Artist, Sundays at 12 p.m. Central on Deep Ellum Radio. Journey of a Song airs Wednesdays at noon Central Time on Deep Ellum Radio, and each episode is available as a podcast the very next day. Discover new music and hear fascinating stories with me, Emmeline, every Wednesday on Deep Ellum Radio and wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to tune in next week. You don't want to miss a single minute of these inspiring conversations. If a picture is worth a thousand words, a song is worth a thousand stories.